Welcome to the Clock End Talk. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And we're just recording this straight after the Arsenal-Brighton game. We've got Tony, Carl and Savvy. How are you, Tony?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. Carl, how are you, buddy?
Very good, thank you.
Very good. Savvy, how are you, mate?
Yeah, very good, mate. Thank you.
Right, let's get straight into it, lads. Arsenal v Brighton. We'll go to you, Tony. You were at the ground.
Yeah, as I always say, a win's a win's a win. You get 3 points, and this game isn't going to be remembered in a month. It probably won't even be remembered during midweek. But we got the win. It was pretty comfortable. We didn't exert too much energy. Brighton showed no ambition at all, and we sort of matched that after we went 1-0 up. It was, a lot of people have been moaning that we weren't going all-out attack and we were playing a lot of sideways passes between our centre-backs, but when you're 1-0 up, you don't want to use all your energy trying to get a second in a game where a team's not trying to attack you, and then if you don't get that second, in the last 20 minutes you're knackered because you've run the legs out of the game, and then they come out and grab an equaliser. That's how a lot of smash and grabs happen. So I think it was actually quite sensible. It's not exciting. It was boring to watch, just Holding and Mustafi pretty much passable between them. But I think tactically it was the right thing to do. And I think a lot of Arsenal fans have a problem in that they want us to win, but they want us to win in style. I mean, if you gave me 38-1 and we won the league, I'd be delighted as well as I'd be bored. But I mean, the priority is winning. The priority isn't to look good.
You'd rather the win over entertaining football?
Oh, the amount of times I've been to games and like it's been 3-0 or 4-0 and people have gone, oh yeah, but it was a good game. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I'd rather see us win 1-0.
Yeah. And what was your thoughts on the game, Carl?
It was a bit of a boring game, wasn't it? I think there was another...
Talk it up, mate. Talk it up.
Highlight the 24th. Fuck, I nearly fell asleep again today. Monreal showing his class again. Good goal. It was a bit of a car crash in the box in the follow up to that goal. But a goal's a goal. Wins a win.
Just quickly on that goal, Carl. There was a lot of people moaning about the ball was out. Was it out on your angle? When he crossed the ball over to the
Lacazette
crossed it over, yeah, and it looked on camera as though it was out, and a lot of people were saying that it was out, and it wasn't until about 10 minutes later the commentators actually said it wasn't out. What you seen it wasn't out as well?
I assumed that it wasn't out. Obviously it was let go just as. That Brighton player, Bruno, him taking the ball blatantly out and it wasn't called. So, there's no point coming back on it now, but I don't think it was out.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was still in. Yeah, I thought it was safe at my first thoughts as well. Yeah. Go on, Carl. Sorry to cut you off, mate.
That's cool.
You're talking about Monreal.
I was looking... in particular, Lacazette's performance today. He didn't score. He had that amazing effort in the first couple of minutes. What I was focusing on was the way he played today. So he wasn't being kind of like that false nine coming in and getting the ball deep. He was kind of trying to do them runs in behind today. And I like to see that. Because against a team like Brighton, you can experiment. Not against a big team, obviously. So... yeah, that was something interesting to see. There was other good performances on the field. Hector Bellerin had a good game. His crossing is improving a lot, like that cross he did on the volley to Ramsey. Ramsey had an okay game, speaking of him. Mustafi stepped up in the absence of Koscielny. But overall, it was boring, but it was a decent game. We'll take it.
We'll take the win, take the 3 points. Yeah. What about you, Savvy? What was your take on the game, Mike?
Yeah, I think... Yeah, we started the game well. I think we were sharp and we were trying in the first 20 minutes. And once we got the goal, I think we didn't really try. And yeah, as Carl mentioned, Lacazette was good. I think though he didn't get his goal, I think he was looking sharp. Monreal was very good. Bellerin was good. I think Ramsey, he was okay, not really good. Xhaka was okay. I think he improved on the last game, and then I think Alexis Sanchez, he had a second, he had a good second half. For the first half, I think he gave too many balls away and he was too slow to attack. And otherwise, it was not an entertaining game. But yeah, we got the 3 points, so it was good for us.
Was it you who was handling our Twitter tonight, wasn't it? On the clock end talk?
Yeah, I was handling.
Yeah, because there was a... You were saying Klozinac was having his worst game ever in an Arsenal shirt, which was... You were talking about
that
the first half?
Mate,
that was me.
Oh, that was you, Tony.
Yeah, wasn't me.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Just explain to the listeners, Tony.
I mean, I don't. Obviously, I always say a game's very different when you can see the whole pitch. But it was like he just thought, I can't be bothered to defend today in the first half. He was out of position at all times. The only chance they really had in the first half was when they hit the post from the free kick. What an effort, by the way. But that was from a ridiculous foul by Kolasinac. Again, he was out of position. And because he was out of position, he just pushed the guy over. And a few people come back with, he went on a, he nearly got an assist. And he was like, he had a couple of good overlaps. And he did. But he was primarily there as a defender and he just refused to do that in the first half. And also, I didn't say at any point he was bad. I said it was his worst half for Arsenal. Yeah. And even if he had got an assist, I still think it would have been his worst half for Arsenal. I can't think of another half he's had this worse. Even when he played at centre-back against Leicester and Stoke, he was just woefully out of position at all times. It was like we was playing four at the back and he was sort of... In no man's land, it was like we were playing four at the back with a random wing back. It was weird. But I don't know if that's because, I mean, obviously they gave us a lot of the ball. And I think he got so excited running forward, he forgot that he would occasionally need to run back. And then because he was starting 5 yards behind, because he didn't anticipate any runs, he was just out of position literally at all times.
Well, just out of interest, because I tweeted out about an hour ago, who was your man of the match? And Iwobi 18%, Monreal 64%, Mustafi 6%. I actually put Klozinac in there, who has got 12% of the vote, just to see what people were thinking. A lot of comments have come through Sanchez. But like I said, I put Klozinac there because I think people seem to vote. I don't know, and I don't want to take anything away from anybody, but I often wonder, fans see the game in different eyes and look, my favourite player is Xhaka. I love the guy, but tonight he wasn't on his game today, and same as last week, he just puts them silly passes into no man's land, and I think I just wish you could.
Yeah,
I don't know what, but I'm not going to say he was the man of the match, and the reason I put Klozinac there because I wanted to see how many would actually pick Klozinac. Who was your man of the match, Tony?
Just to let me cover that point quickly, I think sometimes you get like favourite players and people want them to be good, so they don't see the negative in anything they do. Like, so again, like Kolasinac went on an overlapping run and put a good ball in and people go, he's nearly got an assist. Okay, yep. But he's a defender. If they would have scored four in that first half and he got an assist, you'd have gone, great game, he got an assist. It's like, just because you want him to be good, you do also have to look at the negatives at times. Because that you improve on the negatives, you don't improve on the good bits. I thought today was difficult to give a man in a match because no one stood out. I thought Sanchez was awful for 50 minutes. And then for 25 after that, he showed why you put up with the awful 50. After he got the assist, for the 20 minutes, he was unplayable. Xhaka, I know you just mentioned him. I didn't think he was bad. Again, sometimes when you can see the whole pitch, there was one I remembered early on and I thought this wouldn't have been seen on TV, that Sanchez made a run and then stopped and Xhaka played the ball where Sanchez was started making the run. And to the TV viewer, it looks like Xhaka's just kicked the ball to their keeper.
Yeah, but
It was, and Sanchez said sorry. Like, but obviously on TV, the commentator's probably gone, he's just overhit that or whatever. But it was actually the perfect ball for the run that was made. But Sanchez, for some reason, abandoned the run. And as I said, it was Sanchez that apologises. It wasn't Xhaka saying, sorry, I overhit that. I think I would probably go with man of the match as Nacho for consistency. I don't think he was brilliant. He's the same as he is every other week. He was very good against West Brom, but he was his sort of normal 7, 8 out of 10. But I don't think anyone else was consistent enough over the 90 minutes to warrant them getting it.
He's consistent, though, isn't he? Like, every match, every game. Yeah. You know what you're going to get out of Monreal. Who are you going, leaning towards, Savvy?
Yeah, my man of the match, yeah. I'll go with Nacho Monreal only. I think he was good. He was brilliant against West Brom. And today, I think he scored the goal, got his goal, and he didn't put a foot wrong. So, yeah, he's the man of the match. And close behind, I'll put Hector Bellerin.
That's his third game in a row now. He's actually playing some good football, Bellerin. Carl, what's your take on it, mate?
Definitely Monreal, man of the match. Yeah, he didn't do anything special, didn't set the world alight, but who did in the Arsenal team? He was the best out of a bunch of players who had average performances. Mm. Going on Savvy's point, Bellerin was good today. He just needs to learn how to defend close to the corner flag.
Yeah.
And I have to, look, I'm an Aussie, so I've got to make a special mention of Matt Ryan. How good was he in goals today for Brighton?
I don't know if it's because you lot play like rugby and cricket, but the guy needs to learn to kick the ball. I think what happened is he was a failed wicketkeeper because he was good at, his reactions are good, he could catch, but kicking the thing.
I have to agree. I was talking about the save. There was one save that he made, and I thought,
Yeah, from Ramsey. I think it was Ramsey, phenomenal.
So look, and when I do the man of the matches and I put a poll up, I do throw a little curveball of a player in there just to get people's true takes on it. I see a lot of people have commented Sanchez, and I look. Straight up, the headlines here today is Sanchez helps Arsenal win against Brighton with an awesome flick pass of an assist. So, as you said, Tony, the last 25 minutes is the reason why we put up with the 50 minutes of shit. So, not shit, but average, and then the big player Sanchez, he gets the headlines because Monreal's not going to get a headline, is he?
It's not fair.
No. Just talking on Sanchez, news just come in. PSG is set to offer Alexis Sanchez $10 million plus bonus in January. Interesting. Would you take that, Tony?
I don't know. It depends on the transfer fee. That's telling us what they're potentially offering him. But what they're offering us is more of concern to me. I couldn't care less what he earns.
Alexis Sanchez, a giant fee of $10 million bonus to sign a pre-contract agreement with a club in January.
I feel like if it's a pre-contract, that means they'll be taking him from us on a free, and we have no choice in the matter.
Okay.
So that's basically saying they'll give him a $10 million sign-on fee to agree in January to sign for them in June for obviously no transfer fee.
Well, it's not one of the great publishers. So it could be just a bit of bullshit anyway. Okay, anything else we want to add on that game, lads? Carl, Savvy?
I heard the commentators from where I was watching just before halftime saying that AC Milan were going to come in with a monster $75 million offer for Sanchez in January. They didn't got any truth in that?
Yeah, I did see something like that.
Yeah, I heard that. I think Peter Drury was also talking about it. So
does he need a lift?
That's crazy, isn't it? Wow. Okay.
Take that any day.
Yeah, that's $75 million.
I mean, it won't happen because again, they can negotiate. Teams from abroad can negotiate with him in January without having to go through Arsenal. So why would you pay $75 million when you can just say to him, rather than pay that $75 million, you could say to him, "We'll give you £30 million cash to come and sign for us in the summer." Like, it doesn't make sense.
Isn't AC Milan, aren't they a little bit worried about their financial fair play?
I don't know. I don't know if anyone is or anyone isn't. They make it up as they go along, don't they?
It's just what I was, it was during the transfer window they were talking about it, but what truth's in it, you never know. Okay, Monreal, man of the match, 3 points, lads, in a game that wasn't overly... It was a win. A win's a win. We'll take it any day of the week. It wasn't an exciting win. We move on to last week. We had a Europa League match against Bate. We had our younger team out. Tony, did you catch that game?
Yeah, it was the first time in years I watched Arsenal on TV and I hated every minute of it. Yeah, it was a weird performance. They were a lot worse than expected, especially when you look at their home European record, and it's not a Europa League record, as people keep saying. Their home record's been gained in the Champions League, and they've had teams like Bayern, Barca, and there was another big team, it might have been Dortmund, I can't remember, who have been there in recent years, and they've only lost one of them games against Barcelona. I expected it to be a lot harder than it was. They were just so open. It was unbelievable. I don't know whether they maybe took their foot off the gas because they saw that it was a team of players whose names they probably didn't know. But yeah, they were bad. They were so open. On the other hand, I thought we were quite good. We were just tired. I think the only reason it ended up with a scoreline as it did is we switched off at 3-0 and then they were absolutely knackered at 4-2. And to be honest, I was worried that Bartey were going to get back into it because our centre midfield were all gone. A decent performance, done the job. Again, I don't really care about the performance in the Europa League. Get through the group, win the group, get an easier tie in the next round. That's all anyone really cares about. Mm-hmm. And if anyone's going to start moaning about it, you only have to look at the team we're playing to know that it's not top priority. So when people are coming, oh, we were good, but we conceded two and we was a bit sloppy, it has no relevance to anything. Mm-hmm. We won the game with some experience to play. It's like, I mean, I know Cole doesn't like Willock, but I thought he had a good game and he will have learned a hell of a lot from that. So, yeah, you can say, oh, we was a bit sloppy conceding too, but the experience gained for him, Reece Nelson, Maitland-Niles got another 90. So just for the experience, whether we were sloppy or not.
I think I put him in the man of the match categories because I thought he played a really good game. But, Carl, what was your take on it, mate?
I'd like to comment on Willock first.
Yep. Go, mate.
I'm going to be nice to him this week. That was a decent performance.
Yep.
I'd say a decent performance, but it was only Bartey, so get ready for the criticism next time you play. Wilshere had a good game, obviously, man of the match. He had a great game. I would have liked to have seen him play against Brighton, even in terms of the substitutes today. But, going back to the Bartey game, he had a good game. He was the magician in the midfield, per se. Walcott had two goals, but it's against Bartey, and he's so inconsistent. It's not worth talking about. Giroud starting as well in some games this season. It just hasn't really clicked with him. He's good off the bench, but just starting 11, even against a team in Belarus, he hasn't really clicked in terms of starting on the field in opposed to coming off the bench.
Yeah, when he comes off the bench, he just asses them goals, doesn't he? He really does, and he's more of an impact player these days. And brilliant to have off the bench, but. Did you see Savvy, goalkeeper? What a shocker.
Yeah.
I think he just lobbed the ball out.
Yeah.
What was your take on it, mate?
I think we there also in Belarus, I think we started the game really well. And the first half, I think Jack Wilshere was unplayable. He had a really great game. And Theo converted his chances. He could easily have had 4 or 5. And I think Willock was good. And I think Niles had a good game. Nelson was good. I think it was a good run out for the young lads. And I can see all of the young lads, they are improving game by game. So yeah, it's good for the team. And we rested most of our players. So I think it was a very good performance in the first half. But later on, as Tony said, we lost the legs and... then we conceded. But yeah, after that, we saw the game out. I think Mustafi was okay. He wasn't that good in that game. He could improve on that. And then, yeah, it was a good performance. So another 3 points for Europa League.
Hmm. Now, because we're the go-to podcast for Giroud and Holding, I'll give a shout-out, Holding. Congratulations on your first goal, champ. And Giroud, yeah. 100 goals. Just on the 100 goals, Tony, what have you got a favourite for Giroud?
I mean, the obvious is that everyone's going to say the Scorpion kick, but I mean, if I was being a bit different, and it's one I've not seen anyone say yet, the equaliser at Old Trafford last year, he came on as a sub, it was like the 95th minute or something ridiculous.
He smashed and it, didn't he?
It was, I mean, yeah, I mean, it was a header at the back post, but he was about a foot and a half over everyone else. Mm. And it was, I don't know, it was obviously the timing in the game. I hate Mourinho so much that not losing that game meant a lot. And I was right behind the goal as well. So it was a game we didn't deserve to get anything out of. And I think that sort of epitomises Giroud. He gets us wins when we probably shouldn't get wins, or he gets us draws when we shouldn't get draws, or just gets winners when maybe they have been deserved. And I think that's been more, I think he scored more important goals than most other players. Very few of his goals, I mean, I've watched, I think most of us have probably watched the montages that have been put together of his goals, all of his goals for the club. Yeah. And very few of them have been sort of when we're 4 or 5 nil up and they don't really matter. A lot of them have been at sort of good times in the game, or tight when the games are tight. So I think that's more of a reflection on his Arsenal career than even the amount of goals. But yeah, I do really like the one at Old Trafford. I know it wasn't the best goal. I've seen probably an Andy Carroll score then, but it was just one I liked because it was very un-Arsenal and it stopped Mourinho winning against us.
He's definitely become a good player for the price we paid for him, hasn't he? Or a bargain.
For 12 million.
Yeah. A bargain. And he gives you, what, 20 goals every season?
At least. Pretty much.
Yeah. Consistent. Carl, you got a favourite goal?
Yeah, speaking of montages, here I am sitting watching one right now. But, Giroud has a knack of scoring good goals against Crystal Palace, as he had that Scorpion kick, as we said. He had a couple of bicycle kicks as well. But my my favourite goal, perhaps if it wasn't the most significant one, was the one against Man City in the Community Shield. One where he hit it from about 30 yards or whatever.
I've got a memory like a goldfish, mate.
Yeah. Okay. Caballero, whatever his name is, the one that's at Chelsea now.
Okay. Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to YouTube that one later and have a look at it again. Savvy, what do you got, mate? You got a favourite goal of Giroud?
Yeah, everyone's favourite Scorpion kick. And I think, I think I mentioned that Old Trafford goal and when Arsenal Twitter asked about your favourite goal for Olivier Giroud. I think it was a very important goal. And after that, I loved it when Mourinho was crying. He was saying, Arsene Wenger finally beat me. So I loved that interview. He was literally crying with the reporter. And then I think his goal against Manchester City away, when I think Cazorla ran the show, that was a good goal. And I think there are many good goals. I think recently goal against Leicester on the opening day. I think it was a very good goal. So yeah, he keeps scoring some important goals.
He does, yeah. I enjoyed, there was one a few years ago against Manchester City. I think it was a long-range goal, and it was probably one of my favourite goals that I've seen him score. But yeah, the Scorpion kick was good too. But
yeah.
Okay, boys. Now we're going to touch on the West Brom game. I know we've a lot of people have probably touched on it, so we'll just go over it briefly. Because our last podcast we did was a preview of the West Brom game. So, thoughts on the West Brom game, Tony, if you can remember that far back.
Yeah. Again, it was a bit like today. Well, no, it wasn't like today, but it was like today in that the performance wasn't excellent, but we got the win. I think we was a bit lucky because goals change games and they should have had a penalty to go 1-0 up. I mean, sitting in the stands, we all thought it was a penalty, but then when you see it back on TV, it's got to be up there with the worst refereeing decisions I've ever seen to not give Jay Rodriguez a penalty. Mm. I know people are saying he played advantage, but one, the ref didn't make a hand signal for advantage, which suggests he wasn't going to give a penalty anyway. And two, there is, unless the ball is in the back of the net, there is no advantage to, there's nothing that is better than having a penalty. We rode our luck a bit, especially in the first half. Nacho Monreal was incredible. We all touched on it earlier, so we don't really need to go over that again. Lacazette, I was really impressed with his movement for his header. I know it looks like, again, I don't know how much you see of it on TV, but it looks like he just headed the ball into an open goal from 4 yards for his first one. But he moved in and out about 6 times. It was literally impossible to mark him. I mean, his movement was that good that on first viewing, you kind of think, how is he not offside? Because he was so far ahead of the defenders in such a short distance. But when you see it back, it was just he was moving nonstop. And it's always going to be a nightmare for someone to keep up with that. The penalty was well taken. It was one of them I was half surprised it was given. You see them all the time. You see that sort of tackle all the time. And especially in the area where it's an important decision, the ref just sort of goes, oh, you've got to be stronger. I mean, it was a foul, but I was just surprised to see it given.
Lacazette, he's taken all our penalties this year, is he?
He's, last season, he had the highest percentage of converted penalties in Europe of people that took over 3, I think, or maybe it was 5. So I would very much assume he's going to be our penalty taker.
Yeah, okay. Carl, what was your thoughts on the game, mate?
Half-decent performance by Arsenal. It's one of them Arsenal games where you look on the performances of the opposing team's players. There wasn't really any standout performances there. We got very lucky that we had to face Jay Rodriguez because he can't finish his dinner. He had so many chances in that match and he couldn't convert any of them. He should have deserved a penalty, but enough about West Brom players. Lacazette had a good game. Ramsey had a great game. Monreal, even better. One of his best in an Arsenal shirt, in my opinion. Mr. Consistent, as we all know him to be.
Yep. Savvy, what was your thoughts on it, mate?
Yeah, same thoughts. I think we were very lucky in the first half to not concede. I think in the first half, Gibbs was good. And it was really really weird to see him in a West Brom shirt. And I think he was playing, his crosses were brilliant. And they should have had a penalty, I think. And our defence, Mustafi, I think he had a horrible game, especially in the first half. Almost gave the penalty away. Then I think Robson Kanu, he was causing him all sorts of problems. Then, once we got the goal and after the first half, we improved and got the job done. So it was a day where we just take the 3 points.
Yeah, I don't want to put a negative spin on it because the last thing I want to be doing is you know, kicking the team, our team, in the guts. But I'm thinking to myself, if that was a penalty, they go up, it's a one-all draw. And then I know it's a lot of ifs, but as Tony said, that one on, it wasn't, you know, it was one of them, wasn't really a penalty and type, you know what I mean? It could have gone either way.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, that game could have finished a one-all draw. And
it's coulda, woulda, shoulda. I mean, my aunt, the other ditch would be my uncle. It's like you could say that, and then you say, okay, we draw there, but then Stoke, we get one of the 4 penalties we should have had, and Lacazette's goal counts, and the points situation remains the same. In football, it's going to happen that you get stuff go for you and you get stuff go against you. I don't think. Look, goals do change games. You can't say, they would have got a penalty which put them 1-0 up and then we scored 2 anyway, so it would have been 2-1. Football doesn't work like that.
Well, I think that Rodriguez one, it was definitely a penalty. It should have been a penalty. And they should have drawn. It should have been a 1-1 draw, whether that changed the way, the shape of the game. And
That would have put them 1-0 up. It wouldn't have been 1-0. That would have put them 1-0 up.
Oh, that would have won 1-0 up. That's right. Yeah, that was before we got the first goal, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So... anyway, I look, and that's probably just the way I look at things, and it is, always should have, would have, could have been, you never know. But yeah, and okay, so move on from the West Brom game. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Jack Wilshere controversy, Carl.
Controversy in the sense of should he be played in the first team or not? I think. So obviously he started both our Europa League games so far this season. And he's been playing very, very well. Oh, one game. Sorry. Yeah, I got crossed up with Doncaster. super mistake. He's been playing very, very well. And it's just a case of, can he be integrated into that team again? Because there are some players that you could highlight of having bad performances in the first team, and someone saying, oh, Wilshere could have created that chance, Wilshere could have finished that, or something like that. I think Wilshere deserves a place in the first team now.
Yeah, I think he's really pushing for a place in the first team, and and you can notice that when he came on against, he came on the second half of the game, and he really, and I think we said it on the podcast that, I asked the question, our midfielders seem to be going somewhere, and at the time Tony said, yeah, because they're all used to playing with Jack. But I think he's alone. Pushing through. Well, yeah, it was. That's who it was. It was in the Europa League, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's Cologne.
Yeah. So, excuse me. So I think there is a bit of the debate there on Jack, whether he does start or whether he doesn't start. And my vote, I think he goes on, and it's about time he hands a first team jersey, Tony.
I'm Jack's biggest fan, and I've argued with people on Clock End Talk endlessly about the merits of keeping Jack at the club, let alone in the team. I've argued with mates sort of offline or at games about keeping Jack, and I'll argue his case until I'm blue in the face, but I don't think he's ready to be starting at the moment unless, I mean, as I said, I'm not his biggest fan when he plays too far forward. As much as I love the guy, I don't think he's as useful when he plays too far forward. So, look, I don't think you're going to break up the Xhaka Ramsey partnership at the minute because they suit each other. Jack, I mean, what people are saying is get rid of Xhaka and play Rambo and Jack together, and it would never work because where Jack's good is, as everyone wants it, the little intricate touches. But we don't. That's not what we need. Like, if Xhaka starts a lot of attacks by playing 50, 60-yard balls or cross-field balls, he switches the play very quickly and very easily. That's not what Jack does. Mm. So I think Jack, if he did come in, it would be for Ramsey. But in this system at the moment, we need Ramsey's legs, and Jack doesn't have that. He's undoubtedly better on the ball. He's more creative, but he doesn't have the legs to get up and down.
I had him penciled in as a first team where Iwobi started tonight, and I thought Jack could have started there if in front of Iwobi, but after seeing Iwobi, I'd probably take that back.
Well, that's that's the place that I think looks most available, but I'm not a big fan of Jack. I know he done very well against Barté the other day, but it was the most open game ever. It was like, here, Jack, have 10 minutes on the ball and do whatever you want. And if you give a player with his quality that much time, then he's going to hurt you. But I think in that position, he ends up, not him, just in general, anyone plays in that position, you end up playing with your back to goal too much. And Jack's not very good with his back to goal. Mm. And it also promotes, you get fouled so much when you've got the back to goal because it allows, the defenders feel like they've got a license to come through you to try and get the ball. Like the amount of time that I think it was either Dunk or Duffy got booked for a foul on Alexis today when, again, the ball came into him and he had his back to goal. Mm-hmm. And the last thing we want is Jack getting routinely fouled because we don't know if his body's going to hold up. I mean, his injury record obviously isn't brilliant, but last year he pretty much did play a full season and he had an impact injury towards the end of the season. So you want to keep him away from impact. And I think if you play him that high up, he's going to have his back to goal. And it promotes impact, which is what we kind of want to avoid him having. He was never going to play today. He's played, obviously, having not played since April and then played two games back-to-back almost, or two games in a week. He was never then going to play another game sort of 3 days on, as much as I would have liked to have seen him at least come on. But no, I don't think he can break into the first team at the moment, and that's coming from someone that, as I said, I'm his biggest fan.
He started Barté game, didn't he? The Barté game?
Jack, he played where Alexis played today.
Okay, yep. Yeah, look, it created a fair bit of debate last week. I remember Jack after the podcast, and a lot of people actually said we should sell him, that, you know, due to injury and stuff. Look, 2 years ago, I thought to myself, before he went to Bournemouth for a loan, I thought, let's sell Jack. But now when you're talking, let's sell him for $5 million, I've now changed my mind to let's keep Jack. Because you're just not going to get your value for money out of what he can offer for $5 million. I think it's ridiculous. What's your... Savvy, you haven't had a talk on this discussion, mate. What's your thoughts on it all?
Yeah, I think I agree with Tony. Jack is just yet not ready to take him. Team. I think he needs to build his fitness, and undoubtedly he's a quality player, but definitely Even we saw against Bate, I think he's not fully fit right now. He needs some time on the training pitch, and I think some minutes in Premier League and some starts in cups, in cup games. Then build his fitness and then slowly bring him into the first team. Right now, he doesn't look ready to start the games because I think Premier League, all games are very high intensity games. So you don't want to play a player who's just catching up with the fitness. So, and yeah, definitely, I would never want Arsenal to sell Jack Wilshere because I think he's a very good player. And we won't get a player of similar quality easily. So it's better to keep him.
Yeah, look, 2 years ago, he probably, 25, 30 million. And he was, you know, a bit injury. But now for 5 million, and I see people say sell him, I think, no, it's crazy. Two years ago, yes, if you're going to sell him, that was a time to do it. But you got anything else to add on that, Carl?
No. Agree with what they say. Yeah, for what you said about 5 million, yeah, there's no point in selling him for the quality he offers in terms of playmaking and passion. Yeah. We talk about that quite a lot, about passionate players, and he's right up there, one of the most passionate players on the pitch. You need that in your team.
Yeah.
2 weeks' time, I think we play Watford. So yeah. Watford would be a too strong of team savvy for him to play, start there?
No, I think, yeah, it's an away game, so you can't really risk it. So I think, yeah, I think we should keep the same team. I think only Holding comes in for Koscielny, or maybe Ozil comes in for Iwobi. But no, Wilshere doesn't start for me against Watford.
Against Watford, okay. You had any closing argument on that, Tony?
No, I don't. I wouldn't start him against Watford. They're playing quite well as well. It's a hard game. It's sort of a London derby. They would claim they're in London. They're not really. Mm. It's a small, intense ground. But we've got an away Europa League game that week in Belgrade, so he'll start there. And then we've got Everton on the Sunday, which he won't play in, or he'll be on the bench unless there's injuries. And then we've got Norwich on the Tuesday. We're playing Sunday, Tuesday after that. So there's still two games for after the international break. In the 2 weeks after that, there's still two games for him to get 90 minutes in both of them. And then by that time, he should be ready. And I know I'm going a bit far in the future. The game after that is Swansea at home, which if they do want to start him in a Premier League game, that probably looks like the one where you're going to get the most chance to ease him in rather than chucking him in at the deep end.
By that time, though, Welbeck would be close to coming back, would he?
Yeah. Welbeck.
2-3 weeks, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Now, just... I don't believe I'm reading this, Carl. Elneny over Xhaka.
Yeah, many people are writing that on
Twitter. I know, heaps of people are writing that on Twitter. Let's ask the question, Tony. I'm fucking shocked.
I cannot believe what I've been reading. The guy just runs up and down. That is it. His positioning is frankly awful. The reason he runs so much is because he's trying to cover his own bad positioning. Like, he brings nothing going forward. He brings nothing defensively because he's out of position. All he does is keep the ball ticking over, which is a skill in a sense. But like, where do you start him? You don't start him when we've got our backs to the wall because he doesn't defend. I mean, you don't start him when we're going all out attack because he can't pass the ball forward.
I'm not a fan of Elneny at all. He offers nothing. And I seen Arsenal put something out the other day. Oh, he's run fucking 50,000 kilometres, done 460 odd, something ridiculous, right? And I thought, why are they talking this bloke up? He's done nothing. Yeah, not starting. Elneny over Xhaka. Come on, lads. Carl, tell me, help me out.
Oh, no, I'm Elneny's biggest fan. Yeah, definitely. Elneny moves like a crab. He really does. He just goes sideways. It's awful. The reason I included that as a question, just because people had the gall to put that online, I was like, please do your homework. Xhaka is a much better player than Elneny. He doesn't offer anything, as you said. I don't know, it was one of those games, I don't know if it was Europa League or whatever, or the League Cup, where he went up trying to play a number 10 for about 5 minutes, and that was awful. The one good moment I saw for Elneny in this club, I don't know if I'm slating him too much, was that goal against Barcelona. But yeah,
that's it.
Over Xhaka,
nearly 2 years.
That was a couple of years ago, yeah. I almost forgot about that. Did he get a goal, did he?
Yeah, it's a good goal. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I don't want to remember it. Savvy, you got anything?
Yeah, I'm never starting Elneny over Xhaka, Ramsey, Wilshere. I think many players are over there who we can start over Elneny. He's just a squad player for me. I'm never starting him over Xhaka.
How much did we pay
even
for
if Xhaka is half fit, I'll start Xhaka over him any day.
How much did we pay for Elneny again?
I think 12, 5 million.
Yeah, that was it. 5 million.
Yeah, 5 million, too much. Okay, we're not starting Elneny over Xhaka. It won't happen. It never will happen. I don't want to hear about it on Clock End Talk. Twitter account again, lads. So I will. No, look, seriously, tell us why. Tell us why Elneny's better than Xhaka. I'm open for criticism. I'm open for discussion. But just don't say, or just tell us why. Have a debate with us. Okay, let's go quickly to another subject. Our home game form. Pretty solid, eh? Tony?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, four wins at home. Three wins without conceding, and obviously we didn't concede away at Chelsea, and it was a 0-0 draw. So, I mean, I wouldn't say we're looking good at the back. I don't know how we've kept four league clean sheets in a row, but we have, so I'm not going to moan about it. But yeah, we've looked. I mean, Leicester was first game of the season, and it was just chaos. But apart from that, the other three games, I know they've not been against the best teams, but we've looked pretty comfortable. I mean, we was never going to lose today. Bournemouth was easy. West Brom, after the shaky start, it was all us. So again, it's been unspectacular. Where City have been scoring fours and fives, we've been scoring twos and threes. But look, I mean, it's not going to. I don't think we'll finish above City anyway. I think they'll win the league by a mile. But it's not going to come down to goal difference at the end of it. Just rack the points up, and just keep doing what you're doing. If you come fifth, because I think realistically the best we can aim for is top four. If you come fifth on goal difference, you've had a massive bit of bad luck. So I think just keep the wins coming. Again, with the amount of competitions, we could go quite far in. Try and not use too much energy if you don't have to. So it's like today, there was no point, as I've mentioned earlier, there's no point pressing on in the game when we had the game won.
Yeah.
Obviously, it is nice to see threes, fours, fives and sixes, but a 2-0 is as good as a 3-0 in 99.9% of cases.
Mm-hmm. Carl?
Yeah, secret to our home form is that our opposition have not been good in any circumstances. The opposition that we face, they haven't posed a threat to our defence. Czech hasn't really been tested apart from, obviously, that Leicester game at the start of the season. It's just been a case of, I don't know if it being at home boosts our confidence for once, but it's either that or the fact that the teams we've been facing have been woeful.
Mm-hmm. And as we're recording this, I'm just watching the Everton-Burnley game just finished. I don't know if you boys watched it, but
yeah.
Burnley now move up to sixth on the ladder. Yeah. Okay. What's your take on it, Savvy? And I haven't got a bet on it this week either.
Yeah, I think we are slowly improving defensively, but yeah, we have been lucky. Very lucky too. I think in West Brom game we could have easily conceded a goal, and then Brighton and Bournemouth were easy. But yeah, I think the key to look good defensively is when you're back three or back four. I think when they play week in week out together. I think we are doing that. Koscielny was injured today, but definitely if they keep gelling well together. We can keep this going. I think Czech is looking good now. He's obviously improving after the first game of the season against Leicester. He wasn't that good. Now I think he's looking good. He's looking decisive.
Just should mention Czech. At what point, Tony, do we look for a replacement for Cech?
So they inquired about Jack Butland in the summer and got told politely to fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine we'll go back in for him. It's a difficult one because you don't want to... I don't think the way modern football is, no one half decent is going to come for it and be a number two for a year or 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone you're looking to sign has to be an improvement, which is going to be difficult because although he's not the greatest, he's also not bad.
Yeah.
So it's for me, it's a tough one. As I said, I think we'll go back in for Butland if we can't get him. I mean, I'd like to hear the names that people would say they would go for, to be honest, because they would have to be better than Cech now, not better than Cech in 2 to 3 years, because, as I said, football, like especially with keepers, where you don't really get much of a chance. But I don't think we realise quite how lucky we are to have someone of Ospina's standard who's happy to be a backup. I know he's not the greatest, but
yeah,
there ain't many number twos out there.
Who did you sign in FIFA 18, Carl?
No one yet.
Okay.
I was thinking of signing Donnarumma, but that's wishful thinking.
I thought you might. I thought you were talking about it during the week. That's why I thought I'll throw you under the bus. okay, Carl, you got any add on that?
No, I just think, Cech. Yeah, he's doing much better than how he was at Leicester. Mm. I mean, not all of them were his fault, but some were kind of easy chances he could have swatted away and he didn't. You could point to other errors from other people like Xhaka. He was causing a lot of goals to be conceded early in the season, but yeah, regardless of that, Cech's been doing well ever since.
Mm. What's and Tony mentioned here, he said, I don't know how our back three are doing as well as they are, but they are. Chambers, is he close to coming back, Tony?
Yeah, I think.
Or Savvy, anyone know?
Yeah, I think he'll be back after the international break. Wenger mentioned when he got injured, after that, I think Wenger mentioned he'll be back after the international break. So,
and Kashani? He's
back. Yeah, I think it was a precaution that we rested him today.
Okay.
He could have played, I'm not sure about that, but I think he'll be back after international break.
Okay, so the holding doesn't get a start and Chambers won't either. They'll be back. Kashani will be back. It'll be Mustafi, Monreal, I suppose. And that's our back three, won't it, bud?
Yeah.
Now, during the week, Tony, you tweeted out, Big Stan's looking to make a move.
Yeah, so to be honest, I don't know where the rumours have come from, but they're coming in thick. And usually at board level when there's rumours, they're true. It's not like transfers where obviously there's millions of options and people just link a name and hope to be right. Usually at board level, there's some substance behind all rumours. And they did come in quite thick the other day that there's no amount been put on it, which will be interesting to see what he values. Well, not what he values the club at, what he wants to buy it for.
Mm.
But yeah, it does seem he's pretty serious on trying to hoover up the remaining shares, which obviously makes sense for him.
Fast forward 5 years, where do you see Arsenal under his regime?
It's a tough one. I mean, as long as we maintain status quo with the top six the way it is, I was just listening to a radio debate before we started, and they were saying that the top six should pretty much maintain the status quo for the foreseeable future. Mm. The money's not going to go down. And the one thing that I don't like the guy, I've made it clear that I think the protests against him are stupid at best, but I don't want him here. But again, I don't think there's any point in protesting and I don't like the guy. But the one thing you can say is he's only ever taken in, I think it's 5 years now, mm-hmm. £3 million out of the club, which to be honest is a drop in the ocean. Compared to what's incoming. So as long as we maintain the status quo with hopefully getting back into the top four, but definitely a top six side with obviously selling out the ground every week, I can't see us falling too much because he's not taking money out. So whatever we bring in is going to be there in theory.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as we stay a Champions League side or that sort of level, we're going to have Champions League sort of money to reinvest, which again should leave us with still better than the other teams. The only way that could hurt us is if, I like to call them sugar daddy owners, come in everywhere else, and then obviously that'll hurt us. But I mean, that's why that's the financial fair play is in place to supposedly stop that happening, but obviously it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the only, that's, I think that's the only thing that could really, really hurt us.
Yeah, yeah. So, Carl, what's your take on it, mate? Firstly, Stan buying the shares and becoming sole owner.
Yeah, from a business sense, that definitely makes sense. His only other rival to Arsenal in terms of having shares is Usmanov, and getting him out of the equation, out of the picture, kind of gives him near full dominance over the club's financial standings. But yeah. In response to that question about how they'd seemed about 4 or 5 years.
5 years, yeah.
Yeah, it could either be great for us or we could be in a pile of rubble, because I don't know about Kroenke. It depends on whether he's going to be able to sanction money for us to spend players and properly improve this team, something that we've been screaming out for the last, at least 3 years now.
Yeah, but let's face it, that the money that's being spent is ridiculous. Like, the amount of, you know, some of the players, you know, I look at them and think, well, how are they worth that? Like, in, you know.
Yeah.
Savvy, I'll ask you the same two questions, mate.
Yeah, I think what they're saying, I think, yeah, it makes sense for Kroenke to buy it. And I think I think Usmanov will try to buy Kroenke's share, but if he refuses to sell, then definitely, I think it makes sense for Usmanov to sell, because he doesn't have much say at the club, and he really, for the money he puts in, the club, he obviously would like some power in the club. So definitely, he's not getting that. So I think, yeah, Kroenke might take it, might buy it, and my personal opinion is, I want his son. I think Josh Kroenke. I think I've read some things about him. I want him more involved in the club if he takes over the whole 97% shares. I think that he looks more ambitious than his dad.
I think he's from what I've been reading as well. He wants to be heavily linked and a boardroom level type of man. I think he wants to take the whole face of the club under his dad, probably. So, which might be a bad thing.
Can I just
Tony.
I was going to say, can I just clarify one thing? When I tweeted it, I said there's a lot more chance of Kroenke getting Usmanov shares than vice versa. Yeah. The reasons for that is, I know we kind of just touched on it, but it's not fully correct saying that Usmanov doesn't have much of a say at the moment, despite owning whatever the percentage. He actually doesn't. He has no say. He's not got a seat on the board. So despite being a 30% owner, he literally has nothing to do with the club, apart from, obviously, if they were to sell up or draw up dividends of the profit, then he would get his 30% or whatever. But he actually has no say, which is the reason why he's a lot more likely to sell than Stan is. Also, obviously, I've said this many times before, that the club is worth a lot more to Kroenke because he leverages these American businesses against it than it is to anyone else. So for, say, Kroenke, I know it's not exactly, but Kroenke's got roughly just over 60% and Usmanov's got about 30, but his 60% is worth more than double Usmanov's 30, just because of what it means to him. So he could get his 30 a lot cheaper than it would be for 60 for Usmanov.
And Usmanov, he looks like heading to Everton, I suppose, with his money, if that does happen, doesn't it?
You'd imagine so, because he's right-hand man who he actually was at Arsenal. So he looked after Usmanov's dealings at Arsenal. Quit the company's called Red and White Holdings. He quit Red and White Holdings to go and buy Everton. And a lot of thought at the time that Usmanov was going to make a big bid for Arsenal, and if he didn't get it, he was going to follow him. The only thing, I think, obviously, with Everton spending quite a lot, and I know it's only been sort of 9 games or whatever, but they've not done much. I don't know if that'll put him off, because they've spent sort of hundreds of millions, well, 100 plus million and not got anywhere. I don't know if they're willing to go to the sort of 500, 600 million levels that probably still wouldn't win him the league, but get him a lot closer. So I don't know if he would go to Everton, but I wouldn't be surprised if he sells up at Arsenal.
Okay. I'm going to just throw something out there. And after Everton just lost to Burnley, 1-0, 2 weeks off now, does Coman get the sack? Tony?
For me, no, just because they've backed him so heavily. Like, they went all out to get Coman and paid a big release fee for a manager to Southampton to get him. Then, obviously, they've backed him very heavily in this window. And after, as I said, 8 or 9 games, 7 league games and then a couple of Europa League, I doubt they would pull the trigger, so to speak. And also, you've got to look at who's out there within Everton's bracket of who they could attract. So no, but I think obviously if similar form, like, I mean, I think I heard on the radio, I haven't really looked at the table because it doesn't interest me until sort of mid-November, but I think on the radio they said if they won today, they would have gone 8th. So yeah, they've not been good, but they've had ridiculously hard fixtures as well. I mean, in their first 6 games, they had United away, City away, Chelsea away, and Tottenham at home.
Yep. Sorry, I've just opened the link on the computer on that. I know we're an Arsenal podcast, but I just thought there's going to be 2 week break now, and is this the time that a few managers get the sack?
Yeah, no, I think it's too early. As I said, there's no replacement. A replacement can't come and buy players anyway. So I'd be amazed. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I really would be surprised.
Fucking, why do they have to have videos autoplay on a fucking computer for? Carl, what's your take on it, mate? Coman.
Yes, it's far too early to say that, you know, he should leave or he should get sacked from Everton. As Tony said, the amount of investment they put into him, the amount, like the thought process of getting him there to Everton just after 7 games where they're in a rut of form, you're not just going to go to him and say, oh, off you drop. Like, he doesn't deserve that, and it wouldn't be very economical for the club.
Yep. Savvy, I won't ask you the same question because we've probably touched on it. But Arsenal fans, yeah. Man, why the fuck are they talking about Everton? But I'm going to continue on the manager. Carlos Ancelotti, he was sacked during the week from Bayern Munich. And it's silly reports. West Ham, they are looking at maybe replacing a manager. What's your thoughts, firstly, on Carlos getting the sack, and then secondly, would West Ham be able to convince him to come, I suppose?
Yeah, I think it was surprising for me because Ancelotti is a 3-time Champions League winner, and he's a very good manager. But obviously he wasn't a Bayern didn't make a haven't started the season really well. And his team selections were getting criticized. So, and I think there was some clash with the board too. That's the main reason he got the sack. If that's the reason, then it makes sense. Because if they had, if they had fallen out with him, so definitely they had to sack him. But on West Ham signing him, I think it's a joke. They're never getting Carlo Ancelotti. I think he's too big a manager for West Ham.
Dream on, lads. Tony, as soon as Ancelotti got the sack, Arsenal, the Wenger out fans come out and say, sign him. What's your thoughts?
It's just dumb. Like, there's no other word to describe it. Wenger's got a contract for until June, whatever year it is, 2019.
Yep.
There's, like, just because, so the board ain't going to go, oh, we've just given you a new contract, but someone else has become available, so see you later, mate.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you're literally wasting your breath talking about it or tweeting about it or whatever. I don't understand what goes through these people's heads. I don't know if it's just they want to get comments, or I've just seen I've just seen one of Arsenal fans TV's favourites tweets about today's game, and it's like, you've literally stopped being a fan now and you're just trying to get comments because what he said was nonsense. And I think that's what's happened with Ancelotti. People have just thought, oh, this will be a bit controversial. This will get views because it's just literally, it's nonsensical. Like, even if we all wanted him, it isn't going to happen. Like linking us with Messi. I would love Messi at Arsenal. It's not going to happen. So I wouldn't waste my time talking about it.
You want to add anything on that, Carl?
It's kind of more of the same, really. It's just these fans, they see a top manager become available and be like, oh, he might be better than Arsene Wenger. You don't realise what you've got. He's still a very good manager, despite all the Wenger in, Wenger out, shake it all about. But, Carlo Ancelotti, no, it's just not going to happen. Like, get over it already and stop trying to get loads of retweets on Twitter.
No, I don't think I did retweet it, but I did put an article out because it got me really thinking, well, who could replace him in 2019? And I did put a bit of an article together, and I'm not a fan of Carlos Ancelotti, actually. I think ever since he left AC Milan, he's done nothing. Like, he was at PSG, he was at Bayern, he was at Real Madrid. But let's face it, I think I even mentioned it in the article, us lads could have won a few trophies with them teams. So, not saying he's a bad manager. Like, yeah, he's a great manager, but have a look at the teams he's got behind him and the players he's got behind him. So, at Arsenal, you haven't got that. You haven't got that that big transfer budget and them big gun top players. You've got, you know, one or two, three good players, great players, and then you've got a couple of consistent players, and you're building a team with a budget of maybe 100 million. So I don't think he'd be the right manager even to take over Arsenal in 2019. Anyway, boys, what else do we need to discuss? Savvy Wenger broke a record today.
Yeah, congratulations to Wenger. I think he becomes the first Premier League manager to beat 45 different oppositions. He surpasses Alex Ferguson. So I think it's a great achievement. And I think he really deserves it. He has been a very loyal servant to the club. And yeah, I wish him well.
Yeah, same. He's done well. And it's a good achievement. Okay, boys, I think that's about us for a wrap, unless you want to add anything else. Just one question, though, Tony. Do you know when Ozil's back?
No, it's a weird one, because he was obviously came on for however many minutes it was, 10, 15 minutes against West Brom. Didn't look incapacitated in any way. And then, obviously, not even in the squad today. I've not heard anything injury-wise, so it's a bit of a strange one. It'll be interesting. What really annoys me, and I think the same is going to happen with Koscielny, I hope I'm wrong, it really annoys me when a player misses a game for a club and then plays for their on international duty. So I wouldn't be surprised if Ozil plays, and I wouldn't be surprised if Koscielny plays.
Sorry to interrupt. I think Ozil's not selected for the German qualifiers. I think he's out of those.
Okay. That eases my mind a bit. As I said, I don't know. There's been no sort of update on his injury. As far as we know, he's not injured because he came back from his injury. And I don't think it was mentioned in Wenger's press conference on Friday. Having said that, he had just got back from Belarus. So he might not have been in touch with the squad, but the injuries and whatnot. But it's a strange one. So I can't give you a comeback date because as far as I know, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I've had a look around. I can't find anything either. But
I think Ozil came out, or I think someone from the club came out and said that the injury reoccurred. The injury he was coming back from, I think it reoccurred, and he'll be back after the international break. And there were some reports that Arsene Wenger requested German management to not take him for the qualifiers. So I think to build up his fitness. And so I think he'll be at the club during the break, and I think he'll build on his fitness.
Okay. Just quickly before we go, Manchester City, Chelsea, Spurs had a good win. What was your favourite? Well, what not favourite, but who looked the most dangerous on the weekend, Tony?
I mean, people are raving about the City performance because they beat a good team, and look, Chelsea are a good team, but I wasn't that impressed. They over, like, again, the British commentary kept going on about how they was overloading the midfield, and Chelsea had no idea how to deal with it, but that was at expense of having no one up front. At no time did they have Gabriel Jesus in the box against three centre-backs. Mm. So it was very unsurprising that the goal came from the edge of the box from an attacking midfielder. I think they sacrificed a goal threat for an extra man in midfield. And barring a moment of, I wouldn't say madness from Chelsea, but a moment of carelessness, City didn't really look like scoring.
Mm.
Oh, I mean, I took player of the year. But I don't think that performance was as good as everyone else is going on about. Mm. Tottenham are playing very well. Harry Kane's a joke. There's no point even mentioning every time he kicks the ball, it goes in the goal.
Mm. No, he is.
And, I mean, United beat a very poor team but got the job done. I think United's win is very similar to our win in that they weren't excellent. Their win was 4-0. Ours was 2-0, but they played the worst team in the league at the moment. So I think United's been sort of on a par with ours. I wouldn't say they was extremely impressive, but they got the job done.
Ask a few Manchester United fans, they'll tell you they've already won the league. Carl, did you have a look at any games other on the weekend?
I only watched the Man City Chelsea game, and I took pleasure in taking a mick out of Chelsea because I was watching it with a Chelsea fan. As it happened to be, but Chelsea were terrible. They weren't good at all.
Man City
could have done a lot more. It wasn't that good of a performance by Man City either. It looked like it had 0-0 written all over it. Come half time, and obviously De Bruyne broke the deadlock, and that's what you expect from such a high caliber player. But it wasn't even that good of a game.
Yeah, right. And De Bruyne got the winning goal, but did Conte, did he set up a defensive Chelsea or Carl?
I don't really know.
No, I didn't see it, so I'm completely in the dark. I watched the Spurs game and some other game. I can't remember now. But anyway, Savvy, what do you watch, mate?
Yeah, I think I watched the City game. I think Conte he was clueless in the game. Chelsea were very bad.
Did you say
and,
clueless?
Yeah, he looked clueless because when Morata got injured, he put Willian on, and after that, I think not even Hazard, Willian, nothing worked out, and they were just played on by Manchester City. So, City were good, but as Tony mentioned, they weren't that good, and they could have had more, but I think it was more down to Chelsea's bad performance than City's good performance.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, I had a look at the Spurs game, Tony, and you're right about Harry Kane. Like, mate, isn't he making it look easy?
He's unplayable. He's like, when he went through for the first, it was obviously about 5 seconds between like him being in and putting the ball in the net. And at no time did I think he isn't going to score. There was not a single bit of doubt. As soon as he got the ball, it's like, okay, just go back to the centre circle.
Yeah, you're going to score, yeah. There's a lot of... and you're getting some extra tonight on this or today on the pod, because I just want to mention Lukaku, Morata, Lacazette, Harry Kane. Now, there's a lot of talk that Lacazette's fallen behind the other couple of strikers. What's your thoughts there, Tony?
I mean, look, he's got four in his first... Well, he didn't play against Liverpool, so... I mean, he came on for 20 minutes. So he's got four in his first six games, essentially, as an Arsenal player. If he keeps that... What's that? Two in every three. If he keeps that up throughout the season, I'll be more than happy. That would be 26 league goals or 25 league goals, obviously, because there's only 38 league games.
Mm.
So... If he carries on with that, they can call him a flop or call him whatever he wants. I'll be more than happy. Lukaku's got 10 in 10. But United have played five of the bottom six, I think. or something stupid. Four of them.
United, so, they haven't played anybody really.
He's gonna score in them games. The games that Lacazette hasn't scored in before today, obviously he got two on Monday, which kind of make up for today. But before today, he didn't score against Chelsea away. Okay, no big deal. A lot of players don't. Yeah. Liverpool away, where he only played 20 minutes. We was awful as a team. And again, even if we were brilliant, you can forgive a player for not scoring at Anfield. And then Stoke away, where it's notoriously a hard place to go. So, I mean, he might be behind in numbers in that the other guys have scored more than him, but it's not like, so I'm not sure. I think there's Lukaku 7-7 in the league, but look at who he's played. Morata is got more than him, but three of them were in the same game. So you can kind of look at, would you prefer someone to score goals in bunches or one per game? Like, what's your option? I don't think he's been left behind. He's not been as eye-catching because he's not an eye-catching type of player. His goals are generally going to be in and around the area. And you'll just go, oh, yeah, good goal sort of thing. Whereas Morata's obviously very good in the air. And one of his goals against Stoke, he outpaced the defender. So he's shown a few different things.
Yeah.
Lukaku's pace and power. Harry Kane, we all know he's pretty much got everything in terms of he can score left foot, right foot, head. He can score in the box, out the box. So I think just Lacazette's not as eye-catching, which is always going to count against him. But if he gets, as I said, if he carries on at the same ratio and gets 26 league goals, I couldn't care less how eye-catching he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm just looking at the top scorer at the moment. So for our listeners as well, Lukaku, and this is only the Premier League, Lukaku's got 7, Morata's got 6, Harry Kane 6, Aguero 6, Jamie Vardy 5, Sterling 5, and then Lacazette in 7th on 4. One of them was a penalty. Jamie Vardy, 2 of his were a penalty as well. Carl, what's your take on Lacazette, mate? Do you think he's going all right and he'll catch these guys?
Right, so people always think about, well, not always think about, but this season they've thought about, rank the top strikers in the Premier League: Lukaku, Aguero, Kane, Morata, Lacazette, and I don't know, someone like Firmino, even though he isn't. But it's just the fact that he doesn't really catch your eye when it comes to his performances. As Tony said, he doesn't catch your eye. He's not going to be on the Sky Sports Twitter page saying, oh, what's your favourite goal of the afternoon and stuff like that. But he does his job. It's not a case of him falling behind anyone because he's putting in the work. 4 goals already. That's a good tally.
Mm-hmm.
He's not falling behind. And also, you've got to take into account the fact that people like Kane and Lukaku, they're Premier League tested. No way am I trying to make an excuse for Lacazette, but we're still trying to find the right way so we can play with Lacazette to get the full potential out of him.
Mm.
Once that's gone, I think he can become the best striker in the Premier League.
Yeah, I agree, because I looked at the assists as well, and you know, an Arsenal player, Xhaka, he's the only one with 2 assists in 12 positions. So when you look at their lack of players with assists, then you... It's hard for a striker to score goals if he's not getting the ball, is he?
Mm.
Savvy, what's your take on it?
Yeah, on your point, I think Ozil hasn't played many games right now. Mm. And he's the creative spark in our team. So he hasn't had many chances. And I think I don't care about the critics who are criticizing him. I think he's a very good player. And the money we spend, I think $50 million well spent. And I really like the player. He's technically very good. His finishing is good. And I think he's a proper striker of, like, they say, fox in the box. Mm-hmm. So I really don't care about if he's 2-3 goals behind others. And it's just 7 games into the season. Mm-hmm. I think he can surpass anyone. He's a very good player, very good striker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see. On Ozil, he's made total passes 15, and he's had 3 key passes in the minimum games that he's played. So when he comes back, I think you're right, Ozil will be there, Sanchez, and everybody's waiting for Ozil, Sanchez and Lacazette to start, aren't we? So
yeah.
Okay, boys, that'll be us. We will come back maybe next week if we've got something to talk about. with the international break, or we might have a week off. We'll see how we go.
Thank you,
and thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. You can follow us at clockand_talk. You can follow our blog, clockand.blog. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you as well.
Thank you. Yeah.